Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirrani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have two very different reviews. Jay Kelly, George Clooney, now streaming on Netflix, was in theaters for a little bit, and we also have Five Nights at Freddy's 2. And we'll be breaking down Quentin Tarantino's list of top 20 movies of the 21st century. Made a big release and made some wild comments in between. We'll break that down, do George Clooney's top 10 performances of all time, and, of course, talk about the big looming Netflix Warner Brothers deal that may or may not happen. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 10, episode here in December, the final movie month of the year for 2025. Kirk, welcome back. Great to have you back.
Hello, boys.
Actually had a last second travel thing, but the Jay Kelly review is so massive, and this is not an exaggeration. By any way possible, we had to make this work. Kendrick Stone's Honeymoon, he'll be back. We're also reviewing Five Nights at Freddy's, as I mentioned at the top in our little pod intro, and then we will talk about, I know that the Netflix thing in Warner Bros. Is big too, but this Tarantino list is unbelievable. Not even the list, the comments that he left are comments that you would send to somebody and then say, hey, don't tell anyone I said these things, typically for the most part. But it is Quentin Tarantino, so he can kind of say whatever he wants. But let's start out. So Kirk will not be in the review for Five Nights at Freddy's, so we're shooting this a little out of order, though. Are you going to be seeing Five Nights at Freddy's 2? Because I know you saw the first. I know your son was a fan of the game.
Yeah, Harry was into the first one, but he's not into the second one, so I think I'm safe. I shouldn't say that. I don't. Maybe it's excellent. I shouldn't judge. But,
I'm not going to spoil it. But if our combined scores are above 50, I'll be stunned. I'll be quite shocked. Let's start with Jay Kelly, though. Famous movie star Jay Kelly and his devoted manager Ron embark on an unexpectedly profound journey through Europe. Along the way, both men confront the choices they've made, relationships with loved ones, and the legacies they'll leave behind. The two people I just mentioned there would be played by George Clooney and Adam Sandler. Laura Dern also in it, Billy Crudup, Riley Keough, a bunch of other people as well. There's a lot of names in this movie. Directed and written by Noah Baumbach. His last movie was Barbie, though that was just writing. His collaborator and partner, Greta Gerwig, also directed that, who's in this as well. She plays Adam Sandler's wife. I typed out Marriott Story. It's actually The Marriage Story. Spelled that wrong in our rundown. Marriage Story, significantly more interesting than Marriott Story. And Meyerowitz Stories, that was another one, which I loved. Francis Ha, some of his past, most more recent, I guess, quote unquote, recent projects. Francis Ha was 2012.
Madagascar.
Box office, super limited release. Almost no release at all. It's a Netflix movie. Netflix exclusive. This is one of Netflix's three movies that'll be pushed for award stuff, though it does look like Frankenstein is going to be the one that kind of wins out as their kind of bell cow, I guess, going into award season. 76%, 86% split on Rotten Tomatoes, critics to audiences, 6.7 on IMDb, Metacritic 67, 3.4 on Letterboxd. This is going to be very interesting. There's one person who I actually have no idea what they think about it, and that's Gooch. But we'll start out with Clemmer. Clemmer, he owns the first review because he saw it before everybody else. So Clemmer, let's hear it. Let's hear this review on Jay Kelly.
Yeah, I did not like this movie. I think it might be the most disappointing movie of the year for me when you consider the people involved. I did not care about Jay Kelly, and I thought it ended up being, we can get in kind of the more specifics in a bit, they made it toothless. They took away, they didn't have the courage to make Jay Kelly actually like this person that they want. This movie wants to be all that jazz so bad. And instead, it's just kind of this weird Hollywood sheen on everything. I really did not like the character, which I know you're kind of not supposed to, but like I said, they didn't make it bad enough. I thought a lot of the people in the movie, especially like the Laura Dern character, were just tropes. And when you compare this to something like Sentimental Value, you can really see the flaws that exist within Jay Kelly. I give this movie a 38.
Whoa.
Wow. 38?
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, which I will say, you pulled the small. You referred to this movie. You texted us. You said Jay Kelly was insufferable.
Yes.
What is your relationship with George Clooney, Clemmer? Like, do you like?
I like George Clooney. When we were putting together our list of like top 10 George Clooney performances, I think I want to like George Clooney more than I guess maybe I do. I mean, he's been in some great movies. He's been in two of my 100 favorite movies of all time. So I do like George Clooney, and I like him too. So I say pretty positive.
Wow, okay. 30. I'm going to note before we get to Kirk, you'll go next. For those wondering, this is not an autobiographical. Like, obviously there's some parallels because George Clooney's a big movie star, but I just saw an interview with him during his press tour. He was like pretty adamant. He's like, I have a great relationship with my father. Like, I have family. I have friends. He obviously has a lot of friends who are not in the film industry as well. That's like a very famous thing. He has like all these buddies he gave money to, and they're like his close friends for like 40 years. I think one of them is Richard Kind, who is in the film. But anyway, but point being, he's been pretty adamant. Like, he's like, hey, by the way, this is not about me. Because Jay Kelly's in this. This is not really a spoiler. Jay Kelly is, he's, you know, has some regrets in his life. he's kind of cast aside his family. So Kirk, opposite end of the spectrum is my tease here. What did you think about Jay Kelly?
Yeah. I mean, I really liked it. You know, I was kind of into it the whole time. I get what Clemmer is saying, I suppose, but I think the point of the movie is we're not supposed to like Jay Kelly. Like, I don't think we're supposed to feel bad for him for a second in this movie, at all. Like, I think he's like, you know, not a great person. He's not a horrible person. He's kind of a conflicted person. I enjoyed it. I thought Clooney was good. I found myself liking him more and more as I was watching it, about an hour, and I said, I'm really enjoying this. I get what you're saying about Laura Dern. Not my favorite character in the movie. Felt underwritten for sure. But the last like half hour when it gets quieter, and it's just kind of him and everyone else is kind of gone and Sandler's there and his dad's there. That's obviously a sweet spot for me. I like these movies. I like when guys are sort of confronting themselves, but to me, it could have been an insurance agent. Like the fact they used Hollywood. I thought it was a good sort of look at a guy going through something. Is he a terribly good person? No, nobody, by the way, nobody in his life thinks that. Even Adam Sandler doesn't think that. His daughters obviously don't think that. His father doesn't think that. You know, when he goes to these festivals, they don't think that. So, you know, I thought, and I actually think that Baumbach's been kind of a slump. I thought there was a return to form in some fashion. I enjoyed it. I sort of bought in from the beginning, and I kind of went for the ride. But yeah, I think the Laura Dern character is definitely underwritten. But I don't think Sandler is, and I think Sandler's very good. In the last half hour, I think he's really good in this movie. So I'll give it an 82. I'll say 82.
That's our biggest difference between scores until mine, which I loved, 88. I love this movie. This is, so I'll also say this too, Clemmer. You don't love like the sad movie star stuff. And no matter how like you look at it, yes, there is a sad movie star in this for sure. I am like that. I love movies about Hollywood. I love shit like this. So this is like kind of my bag. So there's probably like a little bit of bias in that sense, but I kind of what Kirk said for me, it's like, I don't feel any sympathy or empathy for him, but I also don't think that's the point. And I think it's more just a broad story of like success sacrificing relationships, family, etc., for success, no matter where. It just happens to be they just use movies for this. Obviously, that's a pretty relatable thing for them making it. I that was my takeaway. Whether that was the intention or not, I don't know. But that was my biggest takeaway, and because of that, it all kind of worked for me. Like, it's kind of this sad, well, it's kind of spoilers, kind of a loose thing. It's not like this is like fucking Avengers Endgame, but like we'll kind of spoil the ending momentarily. But I kind of thought at the end, like, you get this sad portrait of, like, you know, it's like this realization of, like, man, like I did sacrifice a lot of things, especially family, and now late in career, late in life, regret trying to pick up the pieces. But you know, you can only pick up the pieces and put it together so much. Like, was it worth it for being this big star, for being this big thing that no matter where you go, people stop and freak out? I thought it was very well acted. I love George Clooney. I thought Adam Sandler was really solid. I think, I hate saying overhyped, I think it was very good, but I do think there's a little bit of, like, we probably should have nominated this guy for Uncut Gems. Let's maybe nominate him for something else. I think there's a little bit there with, in terms of his performance, though it is really good. And I think it's a beautiful movie. I love the way they use some of these, like, dream sequence type effects, even just like whether it's him on a phone call with his daughter, like a flashback scene. There's the you mentioned all that jazz, but the director mentioned a lot is Fellini. It's a very Fellini-esque
for sure
movie, not to get all fucking dorky film guy, but that's definitely like what he was going for here. So yeah, I quite enjoyed it. 88 for me. This is very, very up my alley. We'll talk a little more about kind of the end, because I do want to reference what you said in your letterbox review, Clemmer, because I think that's a big point in terms of like this whole, do you feel bad for him? Does it matter? Blah, blah, blah. But we'll spoil that fully momentarily. Gooch, what did you give it?
A little lower than you and Kirk, but definitely much higher than Clemmer. I'm at a 70. Movie star stuff aside, I think the like you were just talking about, the memory stuff, I think they explore that pretty brilliantly. It definitely reminded me quite a bit of Amarcord. If you guys have ever seen that, that's very, very good. But yeah, no, Clooney is somebody that, he's from Kentucky. I grew up kind of like loving him just because of that fact. And he's just so fucking cool. He's like the prom king. I mean, he really can do everything, it seems like, in Hollywood, despite maybe not having the best filmography. There's just never been any denying that he is an A-list movie star. So this was a really cool exploration of that. I do think it's a little strange he's saying that this doesn't have anything to do with his personal life. I think, I don't know if you can like do this movie and then say that it has nothing to do with your personal life. Like, it is very clearly tied to George Clooney. Like, Kentucky references aside,
I think he's trying to make sure people don't think he like ignored his family for 30 years. I think that's like his big thing.
That's fair.
Like, yeah.
Shout out Nick Clooney. That stuff worked for me. I do think a lot of the relationships outside of his relationship with Sandler in this movie are very, like, the stuff with his two daughters, I think, is a little clunky. The stuff with Laura Dern, like you brought up, clunky. The Billy Crudup scene, it's fantastic, but it's still, like, shoved to the side very quickly and left a bit unresolved or never fully fleshed out. So that's where a lot of the points come off for me. But 70 out of 100, I was pleasantly surprised, because I won't lie, the first time I saw this trailer, I kind of was out on it. I was like, this is a little too much, but they ended up pulling through for me.
I agree. I sort of, that why I knocked a few off too, is I like that crude scene at the bar, really good. But then at the end, it's kind of like, yeah, oh, by the way, he's good. We settled. We found this thing on him. And like, I'm like, that ties in pretty neatly. Yeah. That felt a little clean for sure.
It also, the whole thing makes no sense. If you watch the flashback, Crudup was never going to get that part. So it makes the Crudup character
he dicks him
a crazy
over,
person.
He dicks him over, though. Like, Clooney dicks him over for sure. Like,
Crudup, they already said, all right, we're good. Like, he couldn't even finish his audition. So they should have had, by doing that, they give the Jake Kelly character an out. Like, oh, he's not that bad. See, like, he the kid wasn't getting the part anyway. And then, like, with the older director, he didn't want to do that part, right? But he was going to give him the money to fund it. See, Jake Kelly's not that bad, guys. Like, this movie wants it both ways with Jake Kelly. And that was infuriating.
Like, his daughter is pretty cutting in that final. I mean, she literally says, she's like, you know what? I'm paraphrasing. This may not be the exact line. What does she say? She says, like, you know how I know? But we're spoiling now, by the way. She's like, the ending of the movie is he has this whole big tribute thing and he can't get anyone to go with him. And Adam Sandler, oh, I know you think wah, wah. And then he ends up going and he sees this whole flashback, which they do use Clooney's, by the way. That's definitely why people think it's about George, like an autobiography. They use all Clooney's movies.
Yeah, they do. They do.
He apparently didn't know, by the way.
Did you spot Leatherheads in the background?
Yeah.
They put Leatherheads in there.
But he says to made the cut. He says to his daughter. His daughter says to him, like, you know how I know you didn't want to be there for me is that you weren't there for me, or some sort of line like that. Like I know you say like there's some else, but like really not. Like his daughter, I feel like you're a piece of shit. Like fuck
I think
you.
I think a better scene, Clemmer, is like the it's not as crazy, but the scene with Sandler where Sandler's like you just don't care about me, huh? Like you don't care. And Clooney's like, yeah, like what do you? I don't know what you want me to say here. Like yeah, like it's this is not an equal relationship. Like that's a real scene. That's a guy being like an asshole. Like he doesn't have to be this total monster. It can be a little more layered than that.
I agree. It can be layered, but I said the movie just keeps giving him outs. They don't need to give him. And then Jeff, you say the end when he's talking to his daughter, and daughter's like, "You're not there for me." That's not the end. The end's when he watches his filmography and then goes, "Can we do it again?" Which like, "Can we go again?" Which is so
that ruled.
But that kind of makes the point that like he didn't learn anything. Like no, he's still a fucking like you know he's not a good guy.
But it glamorizes his filmography and makes the audience say he shouldn't learn anything.
That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is this guy is shallow. Like he's never going to get past him. A bad ending is if like all of a sudden the screen comes up and his daughter is there with his grandkid and they run and hug him. That would be bad.
I agree.
That would be bad. That didn't happen. He's completely Sandler's getting on that plane. He's fucking done with him. Like Clooney is alone at the end of that movie. He's alone. Now, if your standard is All That Jazz, it's not as good as All That Jazz. All That Jazz is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Right.
But for what this is, I think is good. And I'm with Gooch. Like when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, George Clooney playing George. You know, I'm with you. Like to me, it'd be much more interesting. The casting would be more interesting if Tom Cruise had played it. Or if Denzel Washington had played it. But you go with Clooney, and that's fine. And Clooney's going to do that role. But yeah, I left to walk away thinking, like, this guy is alone for the rest of his life. Like, he'll have a new Laura Dern. He'll have a new Adam Sandler. They'll kiss his ass, and he'll just kind of keep going. And, you know, that his daughters are going to, you know, check in every once in a while. But he's, like, alone. Even that first scene with his daughter. His daughter wanted no part of him at the pool. She's like, yeah, I'm out of here. Like, I don't want to be with you. And he follows her because he's kind of fucking crazy.
But I don't think he has regrets at the end, though.
That's okay. That's the point. He's
so
a shallow guy.
His wife then is that like I don't think that the damage he's done is that bad.
That's the idea of like you're not supposed to feel bad for.
He didn't molest them, Clemmer. He was
no,
fucking,
I know. Like, and know, that's what I mean. Like I don't know which way to go with this movie. Like he's not. They keep giving him outs.
Another thing is Chuck Nolan looking at the end of the Castaway, Clemmer looking around that road. You know.
No, but at least that's a character that has that they don't cheat on. Like that's a real. I feel like that's a real character. Where this, they keep. I said keep giving him outs and keep cheating on it. Where he's not that bad. And also, like when he should have regrets, he doesn't have regrets. Or maybe he shouldn't have regrets because just glamorized his entire career. So I almost think Baumbach doesn't know what to do with him or what this is.
What'd you guys think of the Patrick Wilson character?
Horrible tropes.
I kind of liked it as a foil to
his
own personal life.
Add a nice little layer too to the Sandler.
Yeah. I thought Sandler was excellent, by the way, too.
Like, he was very good.
Really good. Like just, you know, I don't know if he'll get recognized or not. Maybe he'll get nominated, but he was good.
Even the screenplay starts annoying. It's like, oh, let's begin at the end. It's like, all right, like what are we doing?
What complaint is this?
The very first line in the movie is like, "Oh, let's start at the end."
Oh, wait, but you're shooting shooting that scene or whatever.
We know the movie's starting. Enough. Like,
I think you went in with a closed mind. I think.
I mean, I was at a lovely theater. I was at Paris Theater. I was in a good mood. I love A Marriage Story. I think that's fantastic. So, Squid and the Whale is very good.
Great,
I like Bob
great.
Back.
Yeah.
And I really do like Clooney. I wanted to like this. I walked away. I didn't think I'd love this movie going in, but I walked away hating it way more than I thought I would.
I feel like, I mean, look, there. It's not like Baumbach's come out and said some large declaration of like what the ending means and what he's trying to say and like what he's getting at. But so I guess like it is kind of, I mean, I guess they leave it up to being subjective to that sense. But I don't know. Don't you take it as the end too? Like, do you think there's a possibility at the end he's trying to imply like, hey, like, give me another try at this? Like he sees his moments, and it's mixed in with also happening with his family of like, you know, give me another, like, I wish I could have another go at this, like another attempt to make this different.
I'd believe it more if we didn't have, I said, like his glamorized filmography in front of us. Then I would believe it more.
Yeah, I took it as like a guy who looked at it was like, oh, wait, this is actually what means most to me after all of it. Like, I want to be a movie star. I did the things I had to do. And if I could do it again, I'd do the exact same thing. And to me, that's interesting. Like,
I think it's also I think that is also interesting as well. But I do think there's a chance too. Again, I haven't seen anything from him. Like when he says, "Can I go again?" I thought because the shots at the end of again George Clooney's actual movies are shots of him like happy moments with his family, like the good stuff. Right. And I took it initially as, and like, maybe there's two ways to look at me. Maybe there's three ways to look at this. That like, he's like, let me try again here. Like, let me, you know,
yeah, it's possible.
It's coming to a head now after all these things have kind of fallen apart over X amount of time. He's overseas. Like, he now realizes, like, you know, if that's the case, does that change your outlook on it? Or is that even enough? Cause I mean, 30, I mean, you're obviously you dunk this movie into the fucking Earth's core with 38.
Yeah, that wouldn't be enough to change it. No, also, like, he even at the end, he's glamorizing his relationship with his daughters by having that like wannabe all that jazz dance routine at the end there. So
right, because he's not it doesn't land. Like, he's not who he wants to be. Like, there's complications within this guy. But again, if all that jazz is your standard, like, yeah, it's definitely, no, it's not. I would definitely agree. It's not as good as all that jazz. I would agree.
But this movie has so many hat tips to all that jazz where it's
yeah, well, it's influenced by it. Yeah. But
yeah, yeah, like,
yeah, for sure.
I do kind of like that we have three completely different. I don't know where you stand in the Gooch. Cause again, for me, it's like I'm trying to like parse, like, cause I guess I never really thought about it in the other way. Cause I viewed his like dream sequence at the end there as like him staying around, like the what if he had also taken the other path and like been with his daughters and stayed and chose. So I don't know. Would you like, I guess we all kind of have three different views on it. Where do you stand with it, Gooch? What did you see?
I was a little distracted by the age difference between his two daughters in that final scene. It was a bit confusing. I was like,
yeah, that is true.
What is the difference in their ages here? But no, I mean, the movie does open, or not open, but there's a line early on with a man on the train, and he's like, all my memories are, wait, no, that's not the man on the train. But there's a line early on, all my memories are movies, you know? And this is a movie, a home movie that he made with his children. This is really the only meaningful movie he had, or meaningful memory he has of his daughters. That's immediately what he goes back to, is this home movie that he made with his daughters. And I think that's interesting because that is his life. His life is movies. That's all he has. And even when it comes to his relationship with his daughters, that's the only thing he can grab onto, is this home movie. So that's, Clemmer, that's where I was with it.
Clemmer, what number did you give Regretting You?
Oh, I forget. less than this, I believe.
Okay, not much.
I mean, I have this ranked like 103rd of the movies.
Let me go.
Okay.
I've seen 153 movies this year. I have this like around 103.
Both films that ended with like movies. Like, remember the kid made the movie at the end, and this was the montage of Clooney's career. The end of Regretting You. My guy made that.
That's
movie.
Right. That's right. Yeah. At the AMC. Yes.
We got to get Clemmer's Regretting You score.
it's not far off. It's not far off. I was far less disappointed leaving Regretting
You. Okay, 31, 31, 31
on 100. Okay.
That's about right. I'll stand by both those scores.
Hey, fair enough. You know, hey, you viewed it completely different. I also
I don't think I'll say this too. I know that you guys liked it a lot more than I did. I don't think this is not getting universal acclaim. Now it's getting, obviously, people are much more on the side of you guys than me, for the most part. But this,
you're right about this.
Does this get a nomination? I think it does, but it's probably close.
I don't think it'll get nominated for Best Picture, but
no.
I think the only nomination is going to probably be Sandler for
maybe Clooney sneaks in.
I'm sure there's some world where like a writing thing comes into play somewhere, just because you just never know with those things. And Baumbach is pretty heralded and beloved by the people that vote for those things. But it's probably just right now Sandler. I'll tell you what, for as much as we debated and went back and forth on like Best Picture nominees, they almost seem like kind of locked at this, but like there's not much movement early on in the award season. So I don't know what, but Jay Kelly, it seems like Frankenstein will be Netflix's thing. And it does seem like Frankenstein will get a nomination. What that 10th movie is, I don't know at this point. Hasn't been the only real movement, honestly, in award stuff in the last week since we last did this was Chalamet is now minus 200 on DraftKings. So Chalamet's separating himself a little bit. Though I do think I do think Leo's going to close that gap as award season goes along, because I do think one battle, I'll tell you what, very quickly, the embargo lifted on Marty Supreme. Gooch, you have a number one. I know Clemmer and I have a number one on the year.
Two.
Okay, so point being, we have it very high up there. It is funny, all the responses to my Marty Supreme stuff is like, better than one battle, better than one battle. It seems like one battle has, it was obviously always high, like very highly acclaimed, but as more people see it, it seems like one battle is just kind of at the top for everything. So I wouldn't be shocked if Leo closes the gap, though I do still think it's going to be Chalamet.
And I just, I won't give it away. I just saw the movie that I think some people think may be the sort of fan favorite to sort of the Coda Green Book spot to people's hearts to battle one battle after another, and I thought it fucking sucked like you wouldn't believe. I'll just say,
I saw it too. We'll throw it into what we've been watching.
Yeah, no spoilers, but I felt like I was giving birth 12 times while I was watching this movie. I'll say that.
So that's Jay Kelly. Next up, we'll do Freddy's Five Nights at Freddy's 2. This episode brought to you in part by DraftKings. One touchdown can change everything. The crowd, the momentum, the game itself never gets old. Feel the same rush with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, where every touchdown could bring you closer to cashing in. With DraftKings Sportsbook, all the action's in your hands. First touchdown, anytime touchdown, live bets, every play, every snap, every game matters. Missouri listeners, listen up. Guess what? Hope you know this. DraftKings Sportsbook now live in the Show Me State. Here's the best part. New customers bet just $5, and if your bet wins, you'll get $200 in bonus bets instantly. When your team hits the end zone, you could hit the payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code BIGSCREEN, BIGSCREEN. That's code BIGSCREEN. Get $5 when you bet $5 and then get $200 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, Five Nights at Freddy's time. Five Nights at Freddy's 2, just the three of us for this one. 1 year has passed since the supernatural nightmare at Freddy Fazbear's Pizza. Former security guard Mike has kept the truth.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, pass-through of per wager tax may apply in Illinois. 21 and over. Age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer.
From his 11-year-old sister Abby concerning the fate of her animatronic friends. When Abby sneaks out to reconnect with Freddy, Bonnie, Chica, and Foxy, she sets into motion a terrifying series of events that reveals dark secrets about the true origin of Freddy's. An hour and 44 minutes long. The game creator, Scott Cawthon, I was going to say his name. Sure. He is the sole writer of this movie. He had a co-writer in the first one. We call that a mistake. this was should have added another. They should have added a third writer instead of dropping the other writer. A sequel to Five Nights at Freddy's from 2023, a box office smash. $57 million, I believe, is what this is going to be estimated to make over the weekend, which is good. You know what? Whatever. Like, spoiler, we fucking hate this movie. I don't care, though. If it made money, that's great. Whatever. Like, if that gets people to the theaters, fine. Josh Hutcherson, Elizabeth Lail, Piper Rubio, Wayne Knight, McKenna Grace, Skeet Ulrich, and Matthew Lillard. We'll talk about the last two names in a second here, because I think there's some gross marketing with this movie. One of the best critics to audience splits we've seen at Rotten Tomatoes. 12% critics, 88% audiences, 5.8 IMDb, 73 Metacritic, 2.8 Letterboxd. I'll let you start, Clemmer. What did you think about Five Nights at Freddy's 2?
Yeah, I mean, this movie doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a campy comedy? You'll have some elements of that. Does it want to be a horror with training wheels for kids? Doesn't really...
Good way of putting it.
I think it's what it wants to be. It also like doesn't want to be a drama. Like you have like dead children and missing children. It's pretty dark topics to talk about. At the end of the day, it's none of these things really. It's just a bad movie. I have this ranked, you know, I have this, I'm sorry, give us like 22 out of 100. I think it's a little better than the first one. I just did a rewatch I did a watch of the first one so I could at least be up to snuff with this. This is terrible. The first one's terrible. But like it's not. So my nephew loves these movies. He's very excited to go to see this. The theater was all weekend the theater was alive with people excited to see this. So I think it's like good this movie's made. It's like apparently all Easter eggs for the video games, which I've never played. It is. And like
I would even say apparently. I think it's like distractingly so.
None of the Easter eggs made sense to me. I don't play the game. So it, like I would hear the audience react and I'd be like, that was just a weird line reading. Okay. So like whatever. This stinks. I did not like it. I wouldn't recommend this to anybody who hasn't played the games, but there you go. I'm happy it exists.
21 out of 100 for me, a couple points lower than the first movie. I hated this movie. And the same thing for me is I don't know this franchise well enough, and that is what it is. Like that happens from these, but there are moments we're watching this where I'm like, what the fuck are they reacting to? Like, it's not like Chicken Jockey from Minecraft, but like it is. Like there's some things where I'm like, what the fuck? The fuck are we talking about? This is Easter egg slop. And I think it's worse than the first one in terms of that too. I think it's like I think the game creator being the sole writer was a colossal error. Like I get it. I think it's really cool that they do something for the fans. I think that's fine. I think that's really, really neat. And I think especially the case with the first one too. I think the first one, I think that's when you definitely do that. Cause like who knows? Maybe it makes $5 million and you never make another one. I have no problem with that. Second one though, like let's fucking I don't know. It's like what's the point of that? If you make it where it's like I as an audience member who doesn't know the game, I can't like wouldn't you think like someone who makes the game would want to bring people in that don't know it and have people like kind of understand and laugh at things? I don't know. That's just kind of a weird choice for me. But on top of that, for taking out all of that, it also just sucks. Like it's like you're right, I think Clemmer, you nailed it. It's like it's definitely I've heard that line from a bunch of people too. Training wheels horror movie. Like it's like it gets people.
But that's okay.
Which is fine. There's an entry level. Yes, but also I'm not sure. Like that's fine. But the movie also doesn't have to suck ass, right? It's like it's kind of both those things. Like it's this weird campy thing, but also sometimes kind of like supernatural dark and a waste of some actors. Wayne Knight turns in a dreadful performance in this movie. Holy shit. McKenna Grace, great paycheck by McKenna Grace. She does this thing for 30 seconds.
She gives one scream and that's it. And why are those characters even in the movie?
And also I'm going to spoil it too. Gooch, Gooch is a scream head. This guy loves the Scream franchise. Someone like Gooch, he sees in the marketing a Skeet Ulrich, Matthew Lillard reunion off the charts, right? They're not even in a fucking scene together.
I was losing my mind.
That's crazy. They're barely in the movie, period.
There's a point where you think they're going to bring Skeet with them. Like to the. He just like, nah. I'm just going to keep picking up my phone and telling people that this place sucks. What the fuck is that going to get done? He just puts up one flyer that's like, call me if you want to hear how bad this fucking animatronic store is. Like, what is that?
It's like, I get it. They got to market it. But like, it was definitely a selling point to this movie that you're going to get this Scream reunion. And they have. Now, it does seem as maybe they'll be together in the next one, but it's whatever. It's like this movie definitely sets up enough for the next one. Holy fucking shit. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the way this movie ends, fuck off with that ending. Oh, my God.
What do you give it? And what did you think of the first one, too, Gooch?
I give this one a 20, which almost feels generous. I do think it's weirdly better than the last one because it's about 6 minutes shorter.
Yeah, I've seen some – so actually I've seen that my take is a little I'm different than others. Some people like it seems like most people prefer this one to the first.
What are we talking? I mean, like prefer, like what would you rather do?
But that's also that's the other point you could also make is that that is like saying like that pile of shit is a little less stinky than the other pile of shit.
Yeah, right.
And the kids in my theater seemed kind of disappointed. Like the kids behind me. Oh, really? The movie ended, they were like, "We waited 2 years for that." Like they were kind of fucking mad.
I had applause in my theater. Applause, like I was at cons.
Yeah, there was some applause here and there, but like it's weird because it's like they operate on this assumption that we just know everything. They operate like it's like a Spider-Man movie or a Superman movie, like a character in a universe that like even if you've never watched any of it, you have at least a little familiarity where you can like grab onto it and understand what's going on. I don't understand any of like this universe. I don't understand like any of the mechanics or like any of it. Cause like, can they see the dead children at points that can, and I don't want to get too caught up on like this shit because it's, it, I mean, it is a horror movie for babies, but At some point, it has to make a little sense for me.
From my understanding, too, because I did some tried to do some deep research on this just to understand some things. My understanding, too, is that like the lore and the timeline is also fairly muddied in the actual game. Maybe not the lore as much as the timeline. So, like, I do appreciate like the guy who did all of that is also writing the movie. Just so it's like it's also just more confusing. Just makes it like even more like messy.
Compare this to like Minecraft, which I also saw. Did you guys see Minecraft?
Yeah, but I had fun with Minecraft.
That's the thing. Right. Minecraft, look, Minecraft also is like not a great movie, but I thought it was like right average for me. I probably would give it like a 52 or a 48 or something. That's right there for me. But like at least it knew what it was. This is a silly, stupid movie. We're all going to have fun. Okay, I can at least, without knowing Minecraft's world, jump in. With this not knowing what it is, it made it so hard for me to jump into this.
It's like parents. It's also like idea. Parents suck the movie. It's like they make the parents and the adults in this movie so.
Oh yeah, the first scene of the movie is like the ultimate like parents are bad. Look at these look at these bad boys. These parents are bad boys.
This girl is like running around. This little like 7-year-old girl is running around clearly distressed. Doesn't have her parents like screaming about like some other child being hurt, and every parent's like fuck off. Like that's just not believable. Like, it just doesn't work. I'm sorry. Like, all the parents in this movie, like, Wayne Knight is, like, breaking his students, like, clear. Very nice robot, by the way. Amazing robot for a 7th grader, an 11-year-old child.
The Wayne Knight thing, not to get, like, it's a fucking movie with, like, talking animatronics that come to life. But I thought that was so, like, convoluted and stupid. I was like, what? Why does he care like this?
It's some why of that stuff just, like works if like it is full camp, but it doesn't, like Clemmer said, it doesn't commit to the camp. So it just ends up being very bizarre and head scratching.
It's a shame because I think Haunted Chuck E. Cheese is actually a great premise.
It is.
You could really make a really great horror movie with just that premise. But it gets bogged down by like the lore, I guess, of the game or something, or just maybe bad filmmaking. It's the same director from this one than the last one. And she stinks. Emma Taurus?
The main girl that...
The director.
Sorry. The director did return. I should have noted that.
And it's terrible. Let me get her name. It's Tammy, excuse me. And is just bad filmmaking that ruins this great premise? Is it being tied to this video game that makes it a bad movie? I don't know, but it's a good premise.
I think it's the attempt to like make it something more than it is. Like the attempt to like actually have like a like storyline of trauma and things of that nature in this movie, where it should just be a, you know, Chucky movie.
The Chucky's probably a great example. I think it should be a little more in line with like the Chucky movies in terms of like what they're trying to do, but I just don't think.
So we say those things, but we're wrong. Like, this is the movie that should have been made. Look how much money it made. Look how much money the first one made.
That's they fair, did, but Minecraft made a lot of money. Like, I do think you can make something that's a little more fun, that's a little more inviting to non-gameplay. You can still do that, right?
I'd hope so.
Are we just old, too? Like I mentioned before, like, this felt like – I felt like a 150-year-old man who'd never picked up a comic book sitting down for an Avengers movie and being just like,
right.
What the fuck? Just the whole time. What the fuck?
This shit was bad, man. This was like, which, hey, you know what? I'm glad something is out there making money. That's good. That's positive. Great.
And kids were excited.
What a bunch of fucking stupid slop this is.
Awful.
Oh, what a
FNAF. Yeah. FNAF. You got to call it FNAF, by the way. the names of these animatronics. I love the fact that each animatronic has its own specific lore. Very clearly, I don't know what the lore is, but each one does have a lore to it because the kids were popping for certain ones and not for others. So I don't know what's going on there. But shout out Chica. Shout out Fazbear.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
This is right up there with the whatchamacallit, what's the fucking The Purge. Sorry, I'm just having these fucking blanking left and right. The Purge is very similar to The Purge in terms of like, I think it's a concept that works really well that I like quite a bit.
Yes.
But it's just not executed right. And again, I have no problem with pleasing fans, but there isn't. And this is not just unique to this franchise, by the way. I don't like what they did with Star Wars, the last Star Wars movie. They please fans too much. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of Star Wars, but it's like at some point it's like you can find a balance. They don't do that with Five Nights at Freddy's. What a stinker. Oh,
we're getting more of them. So buckle up, boys.
They teased the universe heavily at the end.
Oh, the whole third act is set up for, I guess, part three, which this made so much money. We're getting three, four, five. Good for Josh Hutcherson, I guess, who, by the way, barely, you could tell, he was like sleepwalking this entire movie.
Oh, like, God, this was shit. Like, yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, good happy Lord. Friend. There are some 10-year-olds very angry right now at us, just typing away at their mom's iPad.
the fads heads are not happy with us. Freddy heads, not happy. What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium, where each episode releases 3 hours early. So get it ad-free before anybody else, only when you join Rumble Premium. New episodes of Surviving Barstool will be released every Sunday and Wednesday, leading up to the Labor Day finale on September 7th. You can watch Surviving Barstool at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right. Cinema time, little news roundup. We usually do trailer stuff as well, but we're going to pass on that. I don't think there were a ton of trailers anyway, because there's kind of two huge stories. The first thing being Netflix wanted the bidding war to go for Warner Brothers. We won't hang too long on this because I think at this point, what more is there to say? It still needs to be passed by the FCC regulations. There's a lot of people think it will not. If it doesn't, it's a huge payday for Warner Brothers. They get $5.8 billion, though it's not as simple as obviously them just handing them, you know, that in cash. There's other hurdles and things as well, and time and delays and whatever. But point being, Warner Brothers is a winner, even if this doesn't go through. Some people think that was with intent, that this was done. Some people think it's illegal and bullshit just to collect this because they know it's not going to go through. Larry Ellison, a close friend of Donald Trump, his son is the CEO of Skydance, which took over Paramount, which thought it had the lead for Warner Brothers. So people think that the president might get involved and kind of put a stamp on this and say, nope, not happening. There's rumors of a hostile takeover effort. This thing is a mess. Obviously, if this happens, Netflix gets a ton of IP from Lord of the Rings to Harry Potter, not full rights because it's like film and TV rights, but that includes the new series coming out, all the HBO stuff, including DC HBO Comics. Max, all of DC Comics, film rights, and I guess TV show rights. So it's a huge thing if it happens. I think there's a little excessive doom and gloom. Like, I think it's not good. I think
it's Ted Sarandon.
What?
It's pretty fucking bad, Jeff. Yeah,
it's bad, but there's a difference between you thinking it's bad and me think it's bad and what the consensus is publicly, which is that movies are completely dead and that Netflix is going to put the Batman 2 on Netflix. That's not going to happen. It's not going
to
happen.
Well, is everything going to be limited?
That's the issue.
That to me is sort of one of the key ones. Are they going to limit every theatrical release? I can't intellectually imagine that they're going to do that, but maybe they will. I don't like, you know, I don't know that.
The release window is the big doom and gloom. That should be the main focus, right? But I do think there's an exaggeration point. Like, you're reasonable about it, Gooch, but I don't think most people are. I think people see it and they think that Netflix is already on the fucking water tower in Burbank or wherever the fuck Warner Brothers studio lot is. I forget. It's already on the tower, and Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter on Netflix, and fucking Harry's going to battle Will Byers. Like, that's not where we're at with this. Like, I do think there's a level of an exaggeration where it's like, this is not good, but it's also like, this isn't the end of movies forever. And there's going to be a lot of fucking people that fight this too.
But the problem is, like, the window is the biggest issue. So if Netflix has their way, there really wouldn't be a window at all. And the same day it comes out in theaters, the same day you get on Netflix, which I think would really destroy a lot of movie theaters. I mean, movie theaters are having a tough time staying open as it is. I think that would really be horrible for movie theaters. I think it is pretty devastating news if it goes through, which is the big news.
Yeah, I have a tough time imagining it goes through is the thing.
I do too.
Especially between the service. I think the big holdup is going to be the fact that the streaming services are both so large. Like, HBO Max and Netflix are two of the three or four biggest in the world.
Two of the three biggest. Yeah.
Yeah. And that just, I don't know how you approve that. Like, I mean, anything can happen now, but feels very illegal. I don't think movie theaters are going to die like immediately, but that's just not how Netflix operates. This is going to be a long-term game for them. Like, it's not tomorrow, but 5 years down the line, there's going to be half, like, if this goes through, there would be like half as many theaters as there are now. And then it just continues to snowball and snowball until Netflix has effectively killed the theatrical industry.
Yeah, I guess my question is...
They don't want theaters to exist. It does them no favors.
So what do they do if Sinners never happened and it came to them, they owned it, and it came 3 years from now, let's say. Do they not release it in the theater? They put it in the theaters for 20 days?
They do both.
Yeah, and then it's just... Yeah, I mean, that's kind of... You know, obviously, Warner's had a good year. So, you know, everyone's kind of high on them now. But, again, I don't think the world's ending, but it is definitely a concern. I also, by the way, knowing nothing, don't think it's going to go through. It just feels like a monopoly. But
That's part of my less doom and gloom. Again, I do think this is very bad. I'm absolutely aligned with you, Gooch, and you, Clemmer, as well. We share the same viewpoint, but I do think there's a level of, like what is really, the level of... Because I also think, WGA, DGA, PG, I think all these organizations, all these groups that are behind movies I think you're going to see a lot of people. Also, you can see a lot of people just fucking leave Warner Brothers as well. Like, there are people who just maybe will refuse to work with them or do I do think there are I wouldn't call it game over is my point. You get what I'm saying? I don't think it's like if this goes through tomorrow, it's not full on game over. I do think there is still things that can happen that pushed them away. Remember when Warner Brothers went to the same day thing during COVID and people were like, this is it, this is over, this is the death of this, blah, blah, blah. They stopped doing that. Now, I'm not saying, Netflix, Ted Sarandos is very fucking specific in his ways and what he says, but I'm just saying, I don't know, maybe I'm being an optimist and too much so, but I do think clearly this has pissed off the entire industry, where it's I do think that there could be movement made where, even if this does go through, which I also don't think it will anyway, you can maybe move some things and change some opinions and kind of shift things where maybe it won't be perfect, but it won't be again, the Batman 2 now premiering on Netflix and you have a pop-up for fucking Ninja Swipe.
I will say, when you see things like their statement they put out, though, where it's franchises like Batman, Lord of the Rings, and Casablanca, tend to get a little nervous that it's in the hands of these people. I'm with you. I don't get alarmist generally, but I don't think it's impossible that they combine stupid franchises.
It's very fair in
the AI 2026 world. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know, but it's, I don't think it'll happen. If it happens, it'll probably be a couple of years from now, but it's wild that this, the Netflix is in the movie studio business, but I guess inevitable, right?
One of those things too, where it's Christopher Nolan already isn't with Warner Brothers.
That doesn't help.
This feels like a thing where it's you get Spielberg and Nolan and they come together and Tom Cruise and we're not ever doing this or whatever. We're not working with X and we're doing this, blah, blah, blah. It's just one of those things, but I could also be dead wrong and I should be significantly more concerned, but also a big part of it. Like you said, Gooch, I also don't think it's going to go through. So it does kind of stink. They know what they're doing here. They're going to collect their paycheck and something else will happen. So
maybe this can just go on for ever. They just keep getting into deals that can't get approved. That'd be awesome. I would love that. Also, anybody who owns Warner Brothers just ends up going under. So this could kill Netflix.
Yeah, that is true. Their track record's pretty good.
Warner Brothers, 30 years.
Their obsession with movies in 2025 where one person plays two characters. How many do they have? Three? Alto Knights, Sinners, and Mickey 17.
That's true.
The Monkey doesn't even count. There's been a number of them this
year. Yeah, right. It's right.
That's right.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
All right, next up, we have to talk about this Tarantino list. It's unbelievable. So Quentin Tarantino released his list of the top 20 movies of the 21st century. We're going to do this in the beginning of next year. We're going to do we'll do probably like 25, and we'll do like our top 50 or something. We'll vote on. We'll do like a between the five of us do like a whole ranked ballot and like make a big thing about it.
Clemmer has the life of Chuck at number one so far.
I wouldn't have it number one. I have it way ahead of
as a number one.
Jay Kelly, you guys
as a number one this century.
He was on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast. He announced his 20th best, and he sent a bunch of notes along with it. So we're going to go through this, trying not to spend too long on it, but I do want to read some of what he said because it is unbelievable. He has a rule. This is pretty big to know. He has a rule that it's only one director on the list. So once he says them, they're off. He can't say anything else because there is a thing that people pointed out. He did say that The Social Network was the best movie of the century like a couple years ago. He did say that. Yeah, and it's not on this list. So number one is he has Black Hawk Down. He said, I liked it when I first saw it, but I actually think it was so intense that it stopped working for me. I didn't carry it with me the way that I should have. Since then, I've seen it a couple of times, not a bunch of times, but I think it's a masterwork. And one of the things I love so much about it is this is the only movie that actually goes completely for an Apocalypse Now sense of purpose and visual effect and feeling, and I think it achieves it. It keeps the intensity for 200 hours and 45 minutes or whatever it is, and I watched it again recently. My heart was going through the entire runtime of the movie. It had me and never let me go, and I hadn't seen in a while. The feat of direction is beyond extraordinary. Any thoughts on Black Hawk Down at being at number one or what he said? That's what we'll do. We'll just read these and we'll give some thoughts we have any.
I mean, it would not be in my top 100 this century so far. I mean, I have no problem with it. I don't think
it'll be on our list, right?
Yeah,
I would be surprised.
It's fine. Like, it's okay. It's not Apocalypse Now. That's for fucking sure.
I did a rewatch about 5-6 years ago. It's good.
It's fine.
That's how I felt when I left the theater saw it the first time. It's good. Like Kirk said, it wouldn't be in my top 100.
Yeah, I don't understand this pick. I know he loves the Scott brothers. Like that's my only guess is that he loves Ridley and Tony. Rest in peace. But yeah, no, I don't know how this is his number one. I really don't.
His number two, which if you say you like a movie as much as Quentin Tarantino likes this movie, I think you're a liar. And that's Toy Story 3. Nobody likes the movie.
He does love it.
Tarantino likes Toy, which to be fair, elite movie, unlike incredible movie, one of the greatest trilogies ever made. Everything he says is like obviously dead on. That's not like nobody disagrees with that. If they do, they're just an asshole. But he loves Toy Story 3, loves it. The last 5 minutes ripped my fucking heart out. And he just so funny here, just him saying about Toy Story 3, which it is true. It is this sad ending. The last 5 minutes ripped my fucking heart out. And if I even try to describe the end, I'll start crying, get choked up. It's just remarkable. It's almost a perfect movie. And we don't even get to talk about the great comedy bits, which are never ending. I think people never nail the third film of a trilogy. I think the other one is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly to me. And this is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of animated films. This is the greatest ending of a trilogy. Yeah, so, I mean
yeah, not for me, but yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah, but it's it will not be on my list. But yeah.
He just has such an energy of like kid at the back of the class that just says contrarian shit.
Yeah. Lost in Translation. I felt this is tough for him because now he can't pick any more Sofia Coppola movies. I fell so much in love with Lost in Translation that I fell in love with Sofia Coppola and made her my girlfriend. Unbelievably weird line to read. It also notes in he laughed is the note after he said that. I courted and wooed her and did it all in public. It was like it was out of a Jane Austen novel. I didn't know her well enough to get together on my own, but I kept going to events. I spoke to Pedro Almodovar about this, and we both agree it was such a girly movie. It's in such a delicious way. I hadn't seen such a girly movie in a really long time, and I hadn't seen such a girly movie. That, like, that'd be so well done. This is where, if you hadn't read this yet, this is where it starts to get a little like all over the place. You're like, what the fuck?
This is what Clemmer did with Barry Levinson after Sleepers. He courted him for 4 or 5 years.
Right. I like this movie a lot, Lost in Translation. The more I'm hearing Quentin talk about it, the less I'm kind of getting creeped out by it.
I think it ages okay. I watched it a couple of years ago. It's a young person making a movie. But it's good. It's very well done. Yeah.
Girly in a delicious way is one of the grossest things he's ever said. He said a lot of gross shit.
He's talked about this one before. He went on a podcast and I believe said it was the best of the decade, and that's Dunkirk, another film that I didn't initially like. He said that a lot in this, by the way. What I now love about it is that I feel there's a real mastery to it, and I came around to it watching it again and again and again. The first time, it's not like it left me cold. It was so kind of gobsmacking. I didn't really know what I saw. It was almost too much, and then the second time I saw it, my brain was able to take it in a little bit more, and then the third time and the fourth time, it was just like, wow, it just blew me away. Which I'm curious where Dunkirk, if it lands in our top 50. I like Dunkirk a lot. I don't know if I'm as high, if I'm higher than everyone on that, but I do like Dunkirk. So I think it's a solid pick. It wouldn't be my Nolan pick, obviously, be Oppenheimer.
I kind of feel like I do about Black Hawk Down. I like it a lot. I admire it, but I don't, it's not way up on my list.
Dunkirk. I think I owe it a rewatch because I'm kind of falling on what Kirk's saying. Maybe I need to see it again.
Yeah, I just saw it the one time in the theater, to be fair. I don't think I've seen it again.
Here's the big one. There Will Be Blood. This is the one that caused all the big stir. Daniel, this is unbelievable. Like,
I love this.
Knocked my mic out of the way. This is why he is who he is. And I don't think there's anyone in Hollywood who could get away with saying this and then not be cast aside and nobody wants to talk about or talk to them ever again. Daniel Day-Lewis, the old style craft, that's all he said, by the way. He said the old style craftsmanship quality to the film. It had an old Hollywood craftsmanship without trying to be like that. It was the only film he's ever done, and I brought it up to him, that doesn't have a set piece. The Fire is the closest to a set piece. This was about dealing with the narrative, dealing with the story, and he did it fucking amazingly. There Will Be Blood would stand a good chance at being number one or number two if it didn't have a big giant flaw in it. And the flaw is Paul Dano. obviously, it's supposed to be a two-hander, but it's also drastically obvious that it's not a two-hander. Dano is weak sauce, man. He is the weak sister. Austin Butler would have been wonderful in that role, which is crazy. Austin Butler was in like Disney Channel shows at that age. It's such a weird pick by saying that.
I also don't think he'd be good in it now. Like, if he didn't, this would be bad casting.
Which, by the way, that means Austin Butler's definitely going to be the next thing Tarantino does. He's just such a weak, weak, uninteresting guy. The Jesus. Weakest fucking actor in SAG. That is unbelievable.
And wrong. Like, I love Tarantino. I just rewatched this last week. Dano is incredible. I think Dano's right there with Donald Sutherland, Kevin Bacon, as the best actors never to get nominated for an Oscar. I think Paul Dano's a great actor.
So I thought of you immediately, Kirk, because we've talked about this movie quite a bit. I think you may have said it since we've done this show.
Yeah.
It's the one part of the movie you don't like is Paul
Dano. I don't like Dano at the end. I don't like him in that last scene with Day-Lewis. I think but you know what? Honestly, I think that's a Tarantino criticism of PTA more than Dano. I mean, as a director, he lets him go completely out of control, which a lot of people like. And I like Dano. I thought he was great in The Fablemans, for example. I thought he was really good in that. He's a good actor. He's not the weakest actor in the fucking guild, for sure. But he's always been, to Gucci's point, I've been reading stuff since 92, 93 interviews with him. Like, he focuses on weird shit like this. And, like, God bless him. Like, I don't know. It's, like you said, this is stuff we would text about. Like, good. I'm glad there's somebody, these other directors are like, you can't say this, but, like, it's how he feels. It's crazy, but it's how he feels.
I think he has the honesty to say it. But we should also be able to disagree, too.
Absolutely, of course, yeah.
But you're right, Kirk, in that he – but I'm sorry, Jeff, you're right, that he's the only one that can say this and still be able to do work.
Right. Yeah, I don't really think Jim Cameron at this point, but, like, he's almost in, like, a different, like, space than Tarantino, because Cameron kind of comes in and out as, like, his things are happening, where Tarantino's always, like, saying shit.
No other directors talk about movies like this. That's kind of the point. Right. Like, there's just nobody else who does that. So, like, Spielberg and Scorsese could definitely do that, but they're not going to do that.
There's a good story that PTA tells in a podcast, the A24 podcast, back when Uncut Gems came out, where he visited the set of Little Nicky before casting Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, and Tarantino, like, went up like, what are you doing? Why are you here? Like, freaking out because he was already writing the role of the Bear Jew for Adam Sandler. And he was like, what's happening here? Why are you here? That's a good podcast, by the way, if you want to listen to it. It's the Safdie brothers, obviously topical with both of them having huge movies this year with Marty Supreme and One Battle. Zodiac, David Fincher. When I first watched Zodiac, I wasn't that into it. That's crazy to me. And then it started playing the movie. Started playing on the movie channels, and the first thing I knew, watching 20 minutes of it, 40 minutes of it, and I realized this is a lot more engaging than I remember it being, and it kept grabbing me in different sections, so I decided to watch this goddamn thing again, and it was a whole different experience from that point on. I found myself every 6 or 7 years watching it again, and it's a luxurious experience that I give myself over to. It's mesmerizing work. That was the one, besides the Dano thing, that kind of blew me away the most, that he was like, he didn't like Zodiac at first.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it'll be way up my list when we do it for the century. It's, you know, one of the greatest, so... Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't, like, you know, nitpick somebody in that movie, though. He should be doing that for every movie.
He should. Like, he should be shitting on someone.
Yeah, like Brian Cox in that or somebody. Just find, like, you know, somebody. I don't know.
It is interesting he picked this over Social Network, though, because according to this rule, you can only have one director.
Right, because that was he. Right. He had set a podcast. The Social Network was his number one. It was, like, a perfect movie, essentially, I believe.
If he keeps watching it over the years, like, Zodiac definitely is one you can watch. I know, same as Social Network, but I get that. It kind of lingers with you.
I owe that a rewatch, too.
We'll do the rest of the top 10, and then the 11 through 20, I'll just name them. We can maybe get some thoughts, but I'll read the rest for the rest of the top 10. Because 7 was a surprise. Unstoppable from Tony Scott.
Oh, yeah. He loves that movie. Tony Scott.
He does love Tony Scott. Denzel Washington, Chris Pine. He said it's one of my favorite last movies of a director. I've seen it 4 times, and every time I see it, I like it more. If you asked me years ago, I would have put Man on Fire on the list, but Unstoppable is one of the purest visions of Tony's action aesthetic. The two guys are great together, and it gets better and better. It's one of the best monster movies of the 21st century. The train is a monster. The train becomes a monster. It becomes one of the greatest monsters of our time. Stronger than Godzilla, stronger than those King Kong movies.
I mean, is it just trolling? Like, I don't know.
It feels like he's like trying to prove that he sees movies in a completely different way than the rest of the world. And he's got this third eye that we all wish that we could have. Like, just fuck off. Like, you know what you like, Quentin. Just say what you like.
He had Mad Max Fury Road next. I was actually not going to see it for the simple reason that I've heard him say this before, too. He's talked about this on a podcast, I believe, that in a world where Mel Gibson exists and he's not playing Max, I want Mad Mel. Weeks and weeks passed and people kept talking about how great it was. And Fred, my editor, was saying, I'm serious. You got to do it. Then I saw it. The great stuff is so great. And you're watching a truly great filmmaker. He had all the money in the world and all the time in the world to make it exactly as he wanted. Ironically, made all the money in the world after that. He didn't say that. I just said that. So he had Mad Max Fury Road at 8. Then he had 9, Shaun of the Dead. Said my favorite directorial debut, even though he did a cheapy debut movie he doesn't like to talk about. I love that. He's like, he did another movie. He didn't fucking hate it. I loved how much he loved the Romero universe he recreated. The script is really terrific. It's one of the most quotable films on this list. I still quote the line, the dogs don't look up. It's not a spoof of zombie movies. It's a real zombie movie, and I appreciate the distinction. I actually like that last line a lot. That's a great... great point on Shaun of the Dead. And then Midnight in Paris rounds out the 10. I really Owen Wilson. I spent the first time watching the movie loving it and hating him. The second time I watched it, I was like, okay, don't be such a prick. He's not so bad. Then the third time I watched it, I found myself only watching him. So where does he stand on Owen Wilson now, though? I guess he said present tense, I really can't stand him.
I guess he didn't watch that golf show on Apple TV. I guess he missed that one.
He had Battle Royale at 11, where he ripped Suzanne Collins, the writer of Hunger Games, saying that the people who made Battle Royale should sue Suzanne Collins for everything she owns. That's been a long time thing. People say that it completely.
It is also funny, like Tarantino is like, I'm talking about Dano and Owen Wilson. Tarantino might be the worst actor I've ever seen in the film.
Terrible.
Like he's a horrible actor. Horrible. Like to the point where they were like, we're not going to put you in these fucking things anymore. Like it's even as like a stunt casting, he's terrible in these movies.
After that, he picked a 2014 Israeli black comedy horror thriller called Big Bad Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Then he picked 13 Jackass the Movie.
Though
I will say, he said, as I was making Kill Bill, I thought the movie was so fucking funny. Which this is amazing. As I was making Kill Bill, I thought this movie was so fucking funny. I had to show it to the crew. Like he just turns like Uma Thurman. Like they're all like this excruciating shoot. He's like, hey, come here. We got to watch Jackass. Everybody's got to come on over here. We got to watch this movie. I do love those movies though. The School of Rock at 14. 15 is The Passion of the Christ. And this, I'll read this one. This one's unbelievable. He said, I was laughing a lot during the movie, not because we were trying to be perverse, laughing at Jesus getting fucked up. Extreme violence is just funny to me. And when you go so far beyond extremity, it just gets funnier and funnier. We were just groaning and laughing at how fucked up this was. Mel did a tremendous directorial job. He put me in that time period. I talked to Mel Gibson about this, and he looked at me like I was a fucking nut.
It's hard to do.
At least he knows when people are looking at him that way.
Yeah,
it's true. It's progress.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Then there's The Devil's Rejects from Rob Zombie. I'll tell you what, I don't think that'll be on our list.
I don't think that's on my list.
I don't think that'll be on our list. Then he picks a movie. It's called The Chocolate. He mentions, he goes, I don't think anyone's ever seen this movie. Movie from Thailand. Then he picks Moneyball at 18, which actually, that surprised me. I was actually shocked to see Moneyball on his list. I love Moneyball. Said Brad Pitt's performance is one of my favorite star performances of the last 20 years. Then he gives a unbelievable softball favor to his good buddy Eli Roth by putting Cabin Fever at number 9.
This was
gross. This was like, I was like, come on.
That's fucking horrible.
I love it is that at 19 and not 22. That's
right. See, his 20 surprised me as well. And I actually like this because I actually think this is one of those movies that made it through a bad time with COVID and theater stuff. And it is an incredible movie. And that's Steven Spielberg's West Side Story at 20, which I think is better than the original.
I agree with that.
You don't like You don't like the new West Side Story, Clemmer?
No, I don't.
Ugh.
We already have it. We don't need it again.
I think it's better though. I think it's the rare situation where you had Steven Spielberg came in and actually made it better.
I mean, it's easier to make something 60 years later, I guess. But like, the reason it's so good is because the original, because the songs and what you're getting from that was all in the original.
But that's like saying the original movie's only good because of the original Broadway productions music.
Yeah, but that's different. A movie. That's not fair because you can't go. Not everyone can go see a Broadway show, get a time machine, and see it 60 years ago.
Fair. So you like a single. You like a single remake.
I don't like many remakes.
I don't either. But this was a good one. Like this was that 1-2 punch of West Side Story and The Fabelmans for Spielberg was pretty good late in the game. I would say.
Really liked Fabelmans. Really did not like West Side Story. Just felt it pointless.
I just wish Paul Dano wasn't The Fabelmans. A fucking asshole. His fucking face the whole time.
He used this movie for one last dig, and it was actually at Martin Scorsese. He said, this is the one where Stevens shows he still has it. I don't think Scorsese has made a film this exciting this century. It revitalized him. I couldn't believe I liked the lead, Ansel Elgort, as I didn't like him in anything else. One parting shot.
That's fair, actually.
I agree. God bless him. You know, he's nuts. Let him do his thing. Like, why?
I wish more people would do this.
It reminds me a lot of those like old Orson Welles quotes, like where like, I hate Woody Allen physically. Like, I just dislike the man. Like, and he'd be like, oh yeah, no, Alfred Hitchcock is a fucking hack now. Like, sure, Orson, go to bed.
It's just like, I'd like to know what Spielberg's 10 favorite movies of this year are. Doesn't have to shit on people. Sure. I'd just be curious. Mm-hmm. You know, did he like something that we'd be like, because you mentioned Moneyball. I agree. That does not feel like a Tarantino movie. Did Spielberg like something or like, Jesus, I would have never guessed that. Or Scorsese. I don't know. We don't really know.
So that was a fun. But, I mean, yeah, the Scorsese thing was good. So that's Gangs in New York, Aviator, Departed, Shutter Island, Hugo, Wolf of Wall Street, Silence, Irishman, Kills the Flower Moon. Interesting. Yeah, very. I was excited to talk about one of those. That's fascinating list.
Yeah.
One other quick note here, news wise, Star Wars getting the original 1997 cut released in theaters in 2027.
77
right? Yeah.
What did I say?
97.
Yeah, 19. Oh, you that's a big distinction. 1977 original release. It will not be. So this is a mini Star Wars rant. This is, say what you want about Disney Star Wars. This is something George Lucas would never fucking do. George Lucas is punching air about this.
Yeah, he's not happy. He's not happy.
Lucas views the 97 special edition as the definitive Star Wars. And from there on, what they made more changes to the DVDs and everything. And then they also made changes for the 3D releases, which never happened. Only the Phantom Menace got re-released in 3D. But they're releasing the original cut in 20. That's a huge deal because I would assume Disney's just respected his wishes for a while. And now they're kind of like, fuck you, old man. We're doing this for the 50th anniversary, which they should. They should release the original cut. I grew up in the 97 movies. So to me, like, while some of that shit looks stupid. And I also did grow up watching the originals because – I rented them from Blockbuster and my dad had them, but like the 97 is what I grew up with as a kid. Like those are the first ones I owned like in terms of like a new release as my own. But people begged for this and they're going to do it. Whether this hits physical media and streaming, I don't know. My guess would be no. But people will be banging down the door for this. But this is a move that I think Disney's going to curry some good favor from this because I know Lucas never wanted to do this. This was like a big time no-no from him. So
yeah, I'll be curious how big of an event it is, like how big it opens. Because when they brought them back, your point, the 20th anniversary, Clemmer, you probably remember, it was crazy. He opened like 35 million that weekend. Like
all three of them hit number one. Yeah. Obviously all three of them. I'm excited for this because this is the ones I grew up with. This is the ones like my dad knew.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, it's always weird. Cause like if you're my age, what happened was you saw these in theaters because I'd never seen Star Wars. I was 6 years old. So I'd never seen Star Wars. I saw it in theaters when they re-released. And then I fell in love with them. And I wanted them, and my dad had copies as well, but, like, there's the copy where it's, like, Yoda. I used to have it behind me. It's, like, Yoda's in the front of The Empire Strikes Back. I think Vader's in the front.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And it's like, the green, purple, and blue ones, VHS, and I rented them from Blockbuster. So you would go see the George Lucas special editions in theaters, but then you'd go rent the original cut, which is just a funny. It's, like, they're two – I mean, they're very different, especially A New Hope. So yeah, I'm excited. This will be cool. Anytime Star Wars and I'm including the fucking prequels, and I don't love the prequels, are in theaters, like I will be there. Like it's one of those things. Like I don't take that for granted. So
I've never seen it. So I'm fucking pumped. Sorry, George Lucas.
Oh yeah. Oh good.
Guess what? Not easy to see. You have to have a VHS player or a Laserdisc player. It's not. There is a rare. I actually think one of the DVD releases originally had the original cut on. It's like a very like that's like the special thing. If you have it, like you got lucky. All right, we're a few days into the 12 days of Game Time. Game Time, fantastic ticketing site and app, a sponsor of this podcast, which means they're giving away prizes every day with a $5,000 grand prize at the end. If you still have not entered, go to 12daysofgametime.com. It is free and only takes a few seconds. And there's some big events coming up, so why would you not want to? They just released the World Cup schedule. This season, Game Time is, and it's here, by the way, if you're not a soccer fan, here in the U.S. next year. Game Time is celebrating the moments that made people fans, and they have been enabling those moments for the past 12 years now. And this holiday season, why not use Game Time? I'm actually going to an event later on this evening, the day this podcast comes out. Going to see a college basketball game here in Austin, Texas. Going to see the Longhorns. But in general, ticketing's lead you to some great sporting events. I've been to the Final Four. I've been to big bowl games. I've been to some other huge events across the country. But you can't ever forget your first game. Nothing like my first Browns game at Foxborough Stadium, where the Browns and Tim Couch lost out in their playoff hopes and lost to the Patriots, and I had Patriots fans throw snowballs at me. Nothing gets you to realize you're a shitty Browns fan more than doing that in person for the first time back when you were a kid. All those moments and more, and even the good ones, for most people who don't have to be Browns fans, you can go to Game Time now and get some fantastic tickets, but definitely go and try and win the big time prize they're giving out for the 12 days of Game Time. Go to 12daysofgametime.com today for a chance to experience one of these moments. Game Time, the best ticketing site and app you could possibly have. Everything's up front, easy to read. And again, with the fucking World Cup coming up soon, man, oh man, why would you not want to use Game Time? So much coming up. So shout out to Game Time. Before we do our Clooney list here, anything you've seen lately, Kirk, that you want to?
Well, yeah, I've been kind of out of the loop.
I guess some of the ones that we've reviewed that you have been on for, I'm going to...
What do you think of Zootopia 2?
I haven't seen Zootopia 2 yet, Gooch. People seem to like it, though. It's doing great. I'm happy for them. I saw Wicked 2.
You hated Wicked 2.
I think it's a chance it's the worst movie ever made. Like, I think when you look... when you look at expectations and you look at, like, what the last one was, and you look how lazy this was. Like, I know it's not. I know intellectually it's not. There are things that are good about it, but... Holy shit.
You need to now also give the final nail in the coffin to set up our good friend Gooch here to get ready for his disappointment, though, come Oscar nomination release day, though.
I will. Yes. Oh, yeah. It's going to get nominated for Best Picture. Yeah, it will.
I think there's still a shot at misses. Like a decent
You could be
shot.
Right, but I think it's going to be like 9th or 10th.
Once the critics nominated it, that is like game over to me.
Do you have a score for Wicked 2?
Wicked 2? I'll give it like a 14.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I guess like The Wizard of Oz is important to me as a kid. And I'm like, too. I don't want to get into it because I know you guys have a longer view on it, but like, did the fucking Wizard of Oz happen? Like, in Wicked 2? What the fuck is going on? Like, I don't know. I was baffled during the entire thing. And if I, you know, clock ticks, what the fuck is going on? Not for me. I know people liked it. But I like the first one. So I just thought it was a mess. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
Some other things we mentioned, like, we didn't do a full review on Train Dreams.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it.
Sentimental Value.
Haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I think you're on a lot.
Yeah, I'll see it soon.
Were you on for The Running Man?
Yep. If I was, I think I was. I don't know. If I wasn't, yeah. We talked about it. Yeah, third act, not great. Yeah, I was here for that.
Did you see Rental Family yet?
Yes, I did. Yeah, not a huge fan.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that either. And then Nuremberg, I think did you see Nuremberg?
I did see Nuremberg, yeah. I didn't like it as much as Clemmer. It was fine. It was okay. Russell Crowe's a great actor. He's fucking nuts, but he's a great actor. I wish he did more stuff. I wish he worked with better directors. Yeah, that was my takeaway. Long, too. It was fucking endless.
I don't think we missed much else there.
Yeah, it was only like 2 weeks. It wasn't like
we did Stranger Things last week. Oh, did you like, what do you think about Stranger Things?
I liked it fine. I was not as blown away by the big reveal at the end of the last episode as like the cast was. I saw on Twitter where they're all like, I'm like, well, this guy like already has powers. Like, I wasn't like that surprised. Maybe I should have been. I don't know. And I didn't really care that the kids were like all 80. Like, it didn't really matter. Once you get past it in like the first minute, it's fine.
We all kind of ranted about that a bit last week too.
But they do have to start killing people, like main characters again, because there's no, like, every time this fucking guy comes out, they just like fool it and run away. I'm like, you got to kill a main, you got to pay off. And I think I know he's going to die, obviously. They give hints to that. But at some point, you got to kill a biggie. You got to kill a top five or six character.
I love it. I'm very excited. I think there's a big, big fat time travel elephant in the room that's going to maybe, that I'm a little worried about. A little worried about.
Do you think they're already going to bring in like the HBO people for the crossover? Like,
I already saw a fan made poster of Harry Potter lined up against Vecna.
Oh, really?
So.
See, I was thinking more like, you know, like Kevin Spacey from like Recount or something, where he just kind of is working in the office and they just show up or something. I don't know.
I was disappointed to be reminded that Now You See Me is not a Warner Brothers movie, because I would love if
the universe
showed up in
Mark Ruffalo comes up in the like he did at the end of the movie.
Yeah, you have J. Daniel Atlas walks out of the Upside Down. By the way, I had to look that up. By the way,
that movie, by the way, is killing it internationally. Fucking killing it
overseas. They love Now You See Me. They love Zootopia. They made
like almost 200 million internationally.
Clemmer, anything you've seen?
Do we talk? Are we going to wait and talk about Wake Up Dead Man when it's on Netflix?
Oh yeah, we're talking Wake Up Dead Man next week. If this is part two of the Clemmer hates these movies fiasco.
The guy hates movies. He hates movies.
He does not hate movies. I was waiting for this narrative. It took 10 episodes for you guys to finally hate movies. I've been more positive, Roof Man. Never hates forget movies. Roof Man.
Jay Kelly. I'm going to let pass. Next week is the Clemmer hates movies reckoning.
He's always hated movies.
No, I've been more positive. Roots, on this show throughout.
Roots against the box office. Every January, he'll text me and be like, I don't know. Like, this is the year. I'm like, Clemmer, yeah, it's fucking January. Wolfman came
bad,
out.
This January is bad,
Kirk. Clemmer's going to unzip his hoodie, and you're going to see a Netflix hoodie on. He's going to be like, let's go, baby.
No. You will not get that from me. I saw Sisu, too. I don't know if we've talked about this at all. These Sisu movies are pretty good. They're just, it's action.
I like the first one.
It's wall-to-wall action. And Sisu 2 is a little bit worse than Sisu 1. But if you enjoyed Sisu 1, go see Sisu 2. It delivers exactly what you want from it. Kind of like the anti-Wicked, where it like delivers exactly what you'd expect from the sequel. And it's pretty solid.
Are we doing Hamnet later, Jeff? Or have you guys done that?
I'm going to bring it up in a second.
Okay.
Unless I haven't seen Hamnet yet. I'm seeing it Monday, just FYI.
Okay.
Well, we'll just bring it up now. I also saw Hamnet. I am not a big Hamnet. I definitely did not dislike it as much as Kirk disliked it, but I did not love this movie. This is an okay movie that has incredible acting. I will say they are very good actors and they're very good performances. And I think Chloe Zhao can write very good dialogue. The emotional beats in this movie washed over me like it was nothing. It just did nothing for me. I think it's a very well-made movie. I was I was lucky enough to watch the movie. Like, it's in the 70s for me. We'll talk more about it when we review it. I won't give my score now. You can see it in my letterbox, but I am not any. I was bummed.
Same. I hated it. I'm stunned. You know, I'm stunned. Like, Gooch is like a. Oh, sorry. Is Gooch like a cynical, smart guy? I'm stunned that Gooch liked it. You love this movie, right, Gooch?
I was a fucking puddle. I can't watch the trailer. I have to look away when the trailer plays before movies now because it wrecks me too. Like,
I'll be honest, I don't want to give anything away. I hated that fucking kid.
Noah Jupe? Noah Jupe? Come
shit.
On.
There's a little shit. I don't know. Like, I don't want to. I don't. Like, oh. But here's the thing. I know. It's what I said. Remember I said this about Delivery from Nowhere, Clemmer? Like, I think you get emotional and cry in a movie that you don't think is a good movie. Like, I cried. I was emotional during Hamnet. How can you not be? That's sort of the thing that I think I get tripped up on, I think.
I might have to go back and see it. I might have to put myself through it again to see if I missed anything. Because I there's a very heavy chance that I was very emotionally manipulated.
The emotional manipulation totally worked on me. Totally see that.
Well, let's also call it what it is, too. It is... I'm sorry. It's very Oscar baity. No, like this. It's very. It's
William,
like dripping with thick Oscar bait goo. Like
Shakespeare
it is like,
and, yeah. And yeah, the actors and the director, who I think stinks. Like it's it did not work. Did not work for me.
Did you guys like Nomadland?
It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm the same.
I liked it. I liked it a good level up from Hamnet. Hamnet just didn't work. Which.
Okay. I liked Eternals more than Hamnet.
Oh, no.
Oh. No. Oh.
That should be on the blockbuster box of Eternals.
Right, it's true. I did.
That'd be great. Eternals. Yeah, the steelbook, the new steelbook for Eternals at the bottom says Kirkman had better than Hamnet.
remember the poll quote that was going around Hamnet where some online guy said it's the best movie ever made? This is what some guy is like. It's like not the best movie of the year. It's the best movie. I think it might have been Gooch. I don't know who it was, but it was somebody. I don't know who it was, but geez.
It was like from like the playlist Malaysia. Like it was the most.
She'll win. She should be locked. That's a lock. That's a lot. That's beyond lock for best picture. It is a movie considered it is right now, according to the DraftKings, the number two contender. I think there's right now seven safe you'd bet your salary locks for Best Picture. It's One Battle, Sinners, Hamnet, Sentimental Value, Marty Supreme, Frankenstein, It Was Just an Accident. I think those are the seven, like, if you bet against them being nominated, you're just, like, you're an idiot. I think then you have this bucket of Wicked and Avatar, which I think are locks. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to what's that 10th, which right now it's between, I'd imagine Begonia. I love Train Dreams, by the way. I like that movie more and more. And I'm bummed I didn't see Train Dreams in theaters. And The Secret Agent, which I think The Secret Agent is getting a lot of love.
That's getting a big
one.
You still have the 10, like Jay Kelly and Blue Moon and like sort of these weird weapons. Maybe. I thought for a bit, you know.
So I think there's going to be two blockbusters nominated. I think it's going to be Avatar and Wicked, but friend of Barstool, I keep wanting to say his name is Jay Kelly. It's simply not Jay Kelly.
Who does he do? Who is we talking about?
Nick Kroll. Not Nick Kroll. Nick Kroll's a comedian.
Justin Kroll.
Why the fuck not? Yeah. I'm literally looking at
you got there.
He tweeted at us when we were talking about Best Picture. He said he's seen a lot of buzz for F1. And I actually would not be surprised by that because that's Apple. Apple's chance here. Apple also, I will say this, Apple curried probably a lot of good favor because they let that thing sit in theaters for any time. Yeah. That just hit Apple TV. Like, you can only just stream F1. The three of us saw the movie in June. That's crazy. So I think they've gained a lot of good favor, and I think the Apple push and marketing behind that, because in the end, like, this is what we talked about, Best Picture. I don't think Wicked should be nominated, but, like, that's not the point. Like, the Oscars it's all fucking campaigning. And if you told me Apple, like, Tim Cook was up there campaigning the shit out of F1 and got nominated, I would not be shocked. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting wrinkle. But, again, we'll get more into Oscars as we
– Kirk, do you have – if Wicked 2 gets nominated, is that like, worse than Emilia Perez? Is it the worst
– Oh, I don't – The thing is, the problem is I'm a scale because I like the first Wicked. I liked it. Like, I don't love this, but I thought this was just disgusting. Like, fucking gross. I don't even understand the end of it. Like, they're just like living now in that fucking place and just like fucking all day. Like,
I would say the difference on Emilia Perez, though, is that it did have initial good critics ratings. Everybody hated Emilia Perez. Like, we all rated Wicked low. Like, we all didn't have it as a high rating, but people do like it. That is the thing.
But Emilia Perez, the director, got nominated.
Oh, that's Jacques Audiard.
Yeah, I would say like a month ago, they said Wicked is a chance to win, and now I'd say it's like 70% nominated. But there's like a 1 in 3, 1 in 4 chance.
It would be a lower Rotten Tomatoes score critics wise. It's a 68 Wicked for Good. It was a 71 for Emilia Perez. Wicked for Good, though, the sentiment is just so – Wicked for Good's audience rating is a 93. Emilia Perez was a 17.
Yeah.
We got to get away from – by the way, I got to institute a new rule when it comes to Rotten Tomato rankings. If you have a pop star in your movie, throw it out the fucking window. We're calling it stanflation. Yeah, stanflation is –
But that Wicked crowd is going to like it. They want to like it. Yeah,
people do
too.
Like it, even if they're not big Ariana Grande fan. It just is what it is. Like, it's not a good movie. But
they spam it. They spam it like a motherfucker. Like, that's the thing. Arianators, they're crazy. They're crazy.
But I do think it's selling it short, though, because I think people who are not Ariana Grande fans still like that movie. I don't think it's just that. Because I gave it a bad score on Letterboxd, and I've seen people who just fucking love that movie. Compared to the first one, I just don't get it. Also, if Ariana Grande wins, that's the first person to ever win an Oscar because of a movie from the previous year, by the way. That's exactly why she'd win that award. I also understand it's very unprecedented. There's only been like 10 or 11 people who have ever been nominated for the same role, and most of them are like large gaps in time. Like, it's unprecedented that it's back-to-back years. Which I was also, speaking of back-to-back year releases, I was cracking up. I was watching something earlier about Fast 11 and how all like part one, part twos typically come out back to back years. Harry Potter, Avengers, like the Lord of the Rings movies, like whatever. Like, they come out back to back years. It's gonna be like 5 or 6 years in between part one and part two for Fast 10 and Fast 11 or whatever the fuck it's called. Other things, Gooch, anything quickly you saw?
Yeah, I saw The Whole Bloody Affair, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 finally joined into the way Tarantino intended. Saw that last night. It's crazy. I guess not crazy that it got split up, but it very clearly was intended as a singular movie. And when you see it, it makes complete sense. They extended the animated sequence, about doubled the length of it, and it's incredible. And cleaned up some of the scenes at the front of Volume 2. I had a great time with it. I mean, really awesome. And then post credits, I do have to add, we may have to take Tarantino out back and shoot him in the fucking head, because that Fortnite short that played afterwards is one of the most 70mm film is one of the biggest affronts against movie making I've ever seen. Oh my God. Watch that. Was busy this week with Clemmer out in San Francisco, but I'm glad I was able to see that.
Well, trip for the boys.
Yeah.
I saw Hammer, like I said. A couple of Christmas movies on Netflix if you're interested. Jingle Bell Heist is dog shit. Merry Little Xmas, that's kind of not great either, but better than that. I won't talk about the Hallmark movies I've watched. I also saw, you want to talk about a sequel that came out years after the first, The Family McMullen.
I saw the sequel
to The Brothers McMullen, which I'm not a huge fan of, and it's
no.
He's not my favorite director, and I actually have a pretty big blind spot on him. I only recently did a watch of a lot of movies that I hadn't seen. I thought it was right there. I know some people love it. One of the more fascinating box office stories ever, The Brothers McMullen.
Incredible.
But one of the 90s for sure. The Family McMullen.
Why do you watch these Christmas movies? Like, why?
Well, why do you go to the theater with a thousand
screens? That's
a totally separate thing.
Why do you do that, though?
Like,
I
think there's a difference here. So I go to these movies. Some of them you find you do enjoy.
Why do you go see that Pets movie?
I never would have seen Sisu 2 if I wasn't doing this.
Okay, how about that?
See, that's crazy, because Sisu was like a for movie people, was like a heralded first release.
I must have just missed it.
What's the cartoon we always make fun of Clemmer about? What's the one you just saw?
Pets on a train.
That's the train, but you haven't seen Ephes. Ephes is about a guy who's in New Hampshire playing baseball.
I have to see Ephes. That's true.
Like, it didn't make any sense.
All right, so let's say I'm crazy. So I'm a crazy person. Fine. Jeff, why do you watch Christmas movies you know you're not going to like?
Because he's crazy, too.
Because I also love Christmas. That's also, like, I'm not the only person that watches crappy Christmas movies. That is, like, I'm not
that's
like
not
a
an excuse. I mean,
I'm just saying that is, like, people around Christmas time watch Christmas movies. That's, like, Hallmark's made a whole fucking brand on that.
It does feel like work to watch all those movies.
Yeah, I just don't understand, like, why? Like, you don't like any of them. Like, so why?
Oh, so,
like,
some of them are so bad they're funny.
Oh, I guess I don't.
You both are insane. You know that, right? Like, both of you are insane for these, like, things that you do. Like, these are not normal movie watch. Like, these are not normal things to do.
I mean, it feels like a prison sentence.
I'm saying I'm crazy. I'm wondering why
I'm going to save part of this talk because I enjoy watching really terrible things. It also makes me thoroughly really appreciate, like, when I see something great. But we're going to save this for the Clemmer Hates Movie Reckoning next week.
Oh,
This is going to be underwhelming for you guys. I've already put out my review on this.
There was
for what?
Oh, no, I know. That's why we're saying
it. Yeah, we saw it, yeah.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen your review.
Yeah, that's right.
It really makes me appreciate religion.
That's right. There you go. Chris watched it a few times.
By the way,
what a dummy.
Okay. We'll
just not arguing that.
I watched all of The Beast in Me on Netflix. I thought it was okay. I think Matthew Reese is very good, and I actually didn't love Claire Danes in it. But if you like those types of, like, mystery, like, murder, whatever, like, what was the one with Jake Gyllenhaal? The movie. Yeah. Like, if you like that shit, it's a good enough watch. Pluribus, I'm still chugging along, but I...
It's lost a lot of juice, huh? People on some non-control at all.
It does seem like it's lost a lot of juice.
Oh. Shit.
I'm loving it, but it's good. I do think it maybe should have been a series that dropped all at once. Just by the nature.
Yeah,
of it.
It's just not. It's I like a slow burn. I keep saying the same thing over and over. I like a slow burn, but this is, like, fucking slow. And then just in terms of things I got in the mail, Eyes Wide Shut, Criterion.
Oh, dude, mine still has not come.
Maybe one of my favorite looking steelbooks ever, featuring, I think, Clemmer's favorite actor, Vertigo. This thing is fucking. I got this on eBay. This
one
is
of mine, sure.
International release. Fucking amazing.
I picked up a movie.
What'd you get, Gooch?
What's up, Doc? While we were out in San Francisco, picked up a good San Fran movie. What's up, Doc? If you've never seen it, you're listening to this. Highly recommend. Very funny old movie with Ryan O'Neal and Barbara Streisand.
Peter Bogdanovich. Yeah.
Yeah. Fellas, you already know what time it is. It's time to level up. And Blue Chew just dropped something crazy. I'm talking next level championship belt gold plated energy. Blue Chew Gold is the newest innovation from the number one chewable ED brand. This ain't your grandpa's little blue pill. This is the 4-in-1 beast that's setting the gold standard for performance. We're talking two ingredients for blood flow to keep that rocket pumping, mixed with apomorphine and oxytocin to turn up the arousal and connection in your brain and body. Blue Chew Gold dissolves under your tongue and works in as little as 15 minutes. That means you can get it on quicker and stay in the game longer. Elevation without hesitation. This is peak passion and peak performance in a single tablet. If your bed could talk after this, it'd be asking for a break. Make life easier by getting harder and discover your options at BlueChew.com. And we got a special deal for our listeners. Get 10% off your first month of Blue Chew Gold with code BIGSCREEN. That's promo code BIGSCREEN. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast.
Top 10 George Clooney performances. So we did this for... who did we do it for?
Keanu.
We did it for...
Keanu.
Keanu Reeves. We did top 10. We're going to do performances going forward because I think it's a more interesting way to kind of position it. Clemmer has the first pick, followed by Kirk, then myself, then Gooch, then it snakes back, and then I spun the wheel and Clemmer and Kirk at the extra pick. So top 10 performances of George Clooney's career. Clemmer, number one. Which
this
one?
This is a pretty clear number one for me. It's Michael Clayton. I think this movie is fantastic. I think he's really good in it. This is, when we talk about someone who maybe is like doesn't have maybe the best morality or whatever, talk about like the Jay Kelly or makes different kind of interesting choices. I think Michael Clayton's kind of like the good side of that, like the more interesting side. I just did a rewatch this a couple months ago. It's just phenomenal. It holds up so well. It's so good. That last scene with Tilda Swinton is incredible. This to me is the greatest George Clooney that we get.
Ken, I mean, it's a fucking great movie. It's like basically a perfect movie.
Yeah, Mike Clayton's pretty fantastic. So I would have been my number one as well. Would that have been your number one as well, Gooch?
It wouldn't have in terms of performance, but in terms of movie, I mean, it's one of the best movies of the century. It really is.
So Michael Clayton comes in number one. Kirk, number two for you. For us, we're on our list, but since that was your one, what is your two?
Yeah, it's weird with Clooney because, like, so often he's playing Clooney. Like, it's just he's just one of those guys. So it's hard to differentiate the performances. For me, I kind of look at where he was in his career when Out of Sight came out, which I'm picking two.
Hell yeah.
And we didn't know what was going on. Like, we were kind of – I loved ER those first couple of seasons. He was a TV guy, but he did the I think it was the first – DreamWorks picture, right? With Nicole Kidman was the what was the action movie? The Peacemaker?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they did One Fine Day with Michelle Pfeiffer, and you're like, Batman, and you're like, okay, I don't know what we're doing here. And then he gets with a great director, from a great book, with Scott Frank adapting it, and with an unbelievable cast, and knocks it out of the park. Famously not a hit at the time, but you know, you knew it was a great movie when you saw it. He is fantastic, and you're like, oh, okay, like we're along for the ride here. Like, he's going to be okay. Great movie and a great performance too by Clooney.
Yep. That's when you kind of look at the list, there is like a specific amount that stick out. And that was one that I do feel like, I was like, man, like, I feel like this is one that if I did off the top of my head, I might've forgot about it, which would have been kind of like a crime. But I think that's great at number two. So Mike Clayton, Out of Sight. Number three for me, I'm going Up in the Air. I love Up in the Air. One of my favorite movies ever. I think it's just such a tell you what, you want to talk about like sacrificing family, like that's another George Clooney sacrificing family role. And I think it's so personal, and it's so, I don't know if visceral is the right word, but just there's something about those moments. First of all, it's just a great movie in general, like in terms of how it's directed and how it's shot, and how it looks. But like those moments in the air for him are so peaceful, and you have to, like, I don't think there's many people that could deliver that kind of big star, powerful energy, but in such like a peaceful way in that movie. And some of those like really calming, like solo moments for him. And he acts out, I think, just perfectly some of those really sad, like, fuck, man, scenes. And some funny scenes too. His stuff with Jason Bateman is fantastic in that movie. He's it's a great range of emotions, both laughs, kind of some sad stuff, that I've always loved. I've always been a big fan of Up in the Air. It's one of my favorites. So yeah, that's going to go number three for me.
Great casting
and
too.
Three on, like, our list.
Like Kirk says, how like Clooney always plays himself, and you need someone who's almost like larger than life to play that role, to believe that this guy is able to give such bad news to people all over the country, and that's his entire existence, and the only piece he gets is on that plane. Like, that's it's a really, really great performance by someone. I don't know many guys could pull that off, and he does. That's a great.
It's another movie where at the end he's kind of Michael Clayton, to an extent, Jay Kelly, and this where he's kind of all alone.
He delivers a great monologue at the end. Great monologue at the end of that movie.
Yeah,
that's also got one of my that movie has such great casting. Not to get too much into the movie, but there's so many good little characters, like J.K. Simmons, Zach Galifianakis. When he gets the pay, he's like, oh, great, a packet. It's a very well casted movie in terms of like little roles. But yeah, Up in the Air three for Clooney performances. Gooch, back to back picks.
Number four, I'm going to go with what would have been my number one pick, and that's O Brother, Where Art Thou? I just love his cadence of speech in that movie, his entire performance, and the movie itself I love is just an adaptation of The Odyssey. It's like, I don't know, there's just a quality to him that only he can give that performance. Like, if Ryan Reynolds tries to do that, like, fast-talking, witty shit, like, it turns me off immediately. Right. But when George Clooney is doing it, it works on me, and I'm charmed every single time. And I think that's him at the peak of that power. So, O Brother, Where Art Thou? And then number five, I am shocked you did not go with this, Jeff. And that's Ocean's 11, which...
I get
that it is an ensemble.
For me, I mean, it's my favorite movie ever. But I just think he's better enough. Like, if I'm being, like, objective here, I guess, if we can be objective, I just think he's just better Up in the Air.
I think Ocean's 11 is, like, for me, he is such a, I mean, this isn't a novel idea, but he's so old Hollywood. He's so Cary Grant. He's like, and this is the role that he really gets to flex that in. And I think if he, you know, I mentioned earlier, his filmography almost doesn't line up. with the level of stardom that he is. And I think a large part of that is because Hollywood just, the Hollywood that he would succeed in just doesn't exist. Like, it just doesn't exist. But there are little glimmers, like the Oceans franchise, where he gets to show off, like, the powers that he has. So, yeah, Danny Ocean.
That's the first role I think of with him. So, if you say George Clooney, the first picture is him in Ocean's 11.
He, and I don't think there's anyone else who could have played that role either. Like, I actually, like, and again, I'm super biased, but I actually hate how much people kind of cast aside that movie in terms of, like, oh, it's just a bunch of, you know, big name star. Like, they were, and I know there were some other people who could have played some of those roles, but, like, they were all kind of perfectly fit together to make that work. And he, I don't think there's another star that could play that role. It's a such a larger than life role. You want to talk about larger than life roles, where to direct that group as, like, the leader in the movie, I don't think anyone else could have played that role. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's elite. So I'm glad it's
there's not many people you believe would be like Brad Pitt and Matt Damon's, like, boss, if you will.
Right.
Right. Alexander Payne movie next for me, and that's The Descendants, George Clooney in The Descendants. One of my favorite movies that is, like, I feel like in terms of the 2010s, obviously got respect. It got nominated for a bunch of Oscars, but I do think is, like, still oddly, like, slept on, I guess, on kind of the mainstream. Like, The Descendants, I think, is excellent. I think he's so good. And again, another very similar role to some of these things in terms of, like, you know, what Clooney does, and Clooney plays Clooney. But again, it's like, you put him in these, like, family dynamic roles and stuff like that, he just thrives. Like, which is just, it is fascinating, because again, it's like, he is this guy who is this titan of acting, and he can kind of get down to that level of, like, this average, like, whatever, family man, like, family dynamics type role and crush it. And it feels believable. So yeah, Descendants for me, number six.
It's a sad ass
perfect movie after that. That's not anything to say about Descendants.
Yeah, which, you know, he worked with Payne there, and he wanted the Hayden Church role in Sideways, famously, and Payne was like, nope, that doesn't work. You know, I'll write something for you, and he gave him that. He would have been great in Sideways, not as good as Thomas Hayden Church, but yeah, he would have been too famous. I'm up next?
Yep.
Okay. Well, you know, what's funny about him is, since he's been a star, he doesn't do many supporting roles, and I think he did this because he wanted to help get funding, and he was directing it. It's Good Night and Good Luck. Where I think he's really good is Fred Friendly. It's sort of like a, you know, meat and potatoes, sort of, you know, nerdy almost TV guy working under Morrow. The thing about Clooney as a director that's interesting is I feel like his movies have gotten worse and worse and more boring as he's gotten. Confessions is an exciting, I think, kind of an interesting, some ways, miss. Good Night, Good Luck, I really like. And then, like, a bunch of his movies that have been just boring. Just like, I mean, whatchamacallit 2 years ago was brutal. The Rowling bestseller, the huge book.
The winner movie when he's like.
No, the one, the guys who rowed in the the rowers in the Olympics. He fucking did it 2 years ago.
Boys in the Boat.
Boys in the Boat.
Right.
It could have been directed by 5 billion people.
Monuments Men.
Like, he's gotten very, yeah, right. All the streaming ones, even The Tender Bar. Like, but he's, I think he's actually really good in the small role. And we're kind of ranking movies here, maybe more of his performance, but I think it's a very good performance. And I wish he acted more. I wish he acted with good directors more. I wish he was still with Soderbergh. And you can feel Soderbergh all over that movie. He was a consultant. He was, like, around all the time. And he's really good in it. Really, you know, unmannered Clooney, because he can get very Clooney. And he's really good in that. So I'll go with that.
That's a great pick. Oh, Good Night, Good Luck. Fucking incredible.
It also gave us recently his revival on Broadway with the black hair.
It's tough.
Clemmer, back-to-back picks here.
So I agree with pretty much everybody's picks so far. So now we're all kind of in that. I'm in that same kind of level we're at right now. There's nothing that snuck up. I'm going to go with, and he won the Oscar for it, you know, Syriana. He's very good in it.
Yeah, I love the movie, but yeah, he's good in it.
Yeah, I mean, the movie does kind of come alive when he's in it, when he's in that, like, that hostage chair. It is the best part of that movie. Movie is kind of a slog, but he is very good. I don't know if he deserved the Oscar that year, but it's kind of a lifetime achievement, like Al Pacino and, like, Scent of a Woman. If you want to give him that, I'm glad he got one for all of his work. So I'll go with that pick there. And then I'm going to go with Gravity, Matt Kowalski in Gravity. It's not a huge role either, but you need someone, because it's such a, obviously, no one's in this movie besides Sandra Bullock and him, really. So you really need someone who can kind of be this big presence, and it works there, and he's good in it. And he kind of keeps that movie going that first act. So I'll go with that. But then we're kind of in not great territory.
Yeah, I'm not a huge I respect Gravity for what it is, but I'm not a huge Gravity guy.
Same boat. But we're in this part of the list, though. Where
for sure. Like, there is definitely like a moment where you kind of have to make some things around. It's the last one, yeah. 10. I think 10's a tough pick, Kirk.
Yeah. Well, I'll do it for Clemmer. I'm going to take Jay Kelly.
Yeah.
I think we'll throw it. We'll
how about Three Kings?
Could have taken Three Kings. I definitely would take Three Kings over Gravity. That's for fucking sure.
How about Three Kings over Jay Kelly?
Nah, it pisses you off. Jay Kelly's on the list. I'm gonna do. I also don't like. I think there's a spot for like the Fantastic Mr. Fox, but I don't know what to do with that. Like, I think he's like there, that is a skill, but I'm not gonna. Yeah. I can't do that. So it's my head. I would pick Three Kings. My heart, knowing it bothers Clemmer, I'll pick Jay Kelly. Where Clooney gives a really interesting performance as an aging actor from Kentucky confronting. I don't know where he summoned it. But he managed to pull it off in Jay Kelly. So, yeah, number 10.
Michael Clayton, out of sight, up in the air.
Fucking last scene.
Reckoning.
Old people punching cracks me up.
Michael Clayton, out of sight, up in the air. Oh, brother. Ocean's 11, The Descendants, Good Night, Good Luck, Syrianic, Gravity, Jay Kelly. That's a good list.
I will say it's a tough. He's funny. Like, you can't do a top 14 or top 16. Like, yeah, with Clooney, there's a clear, he just stopped doing stuff.
You want a bad Clooney movie, Midnight Sky.
That's what I was talking about. Oh,
wasn't it Julia Roberts a couple of years ago? What was the
Mad Money?
Oh, Ticket to Paradise.
Mad Money is one too, though. Yeah.
Could you have made a case for Perfect Storm at all? I know it's like
it doesn't really do anything.
Not a bad movie.
I was going to say Burn After Reading.
Yeah, that was one I thought about. He did the other one with
Money Monster.
Didn't he do a Coen Brothers one with Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Yeah, Hail Caesar.
Intolerable Cruelty?
No. Intolerable Cruelty.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking Scarlett Johansson. Hail Caesar would have. I really like Hail Caesar. That might have made my top 10. When he gets robbed by when he gets kidnapped by the communists and he's just there for like the whole movie.
it's very like you have to be very Coen Brothers and Hollywood coded, I think, to really love that movie. I enjoy that movie. But I also like if somebody watched that movie who didn't love movies and stuff and was like, "You're a what the fuck is this?" I'd be like, "Yeah, I'm sorry."
Yeah. You want to hear the fans? This would be I guess best Clooney movies, because it's hard to sort by performance when it comes to these things. But at 10, they have Three Kings. At 9, they have Burn After Reading. 8, Good Night and Good Luck. 7, The Descendants. 6, Out of Sight. 5, Up in the Air. 4, Oh Brother. 3, Michael Clayton. 2, Fantastic Mr. Fox. And 1, Ocean's 11. Pretty good list from the fans, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No Jay Kelly, according to that list.
No Jay Kelly.
No. Just missed. No hey, y'all. It's Gooch. Congratulations on making it this far into Project Big Screen Episode 10. I'm not going to tell you how to join our fan rankings. You just heard those fan rankings of George Clooney movies. I think the fans did pretty good. And for you to join, all I want you to do is comment below, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify. Comment below with one movie that you would like to see re-released in theaters. We talked about Star Wars 1977. I saw Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, The Whole Bloody Affair this week. So comment below with a movie you'd like to see re-released in theaters. It could be a movie you've already seen in theaters, a movie you've never seen in theaters, a movie you've never seen at all. Just comment below with your Letterboxd username. We will follow you on Letterboxd and that will get you into our fan rankings. Once again, we cannot express how much we appreciate all the support we've gotten so far. Keep it up. Keep interacting with all of our stuff. Make sure to like if you're watching on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Like everything. You guys are crushing it for us, really. All right.
Stella Blue Coffee ready-to-drink can lattes are officially available nationwide at Target. That's right. Whether you're making a Target run for toothpaste, paper towels, or somehow spending $200 on things you didn't know you needed, stop by the coffee section and see why everyone is turning to Stella Blue. The cans are made with 100% Colombian coffee, real dairy, real sugar, and contain 190 milligrams of caffeine. They've got dessert-level flavor with coffee-level function. You can choose from espresso, sweet cream, or espresso cafe mocha. And once you try them, you'll understand why they're the best canned lattes out there. Here's the best part. 100% of proceeds will go toward our We Brew to Rescue mission, in which we're funding the adoption of 1,000 pets across the country. Grab a Stella Blue at Target, taste the difference, and make a difference. Stella Blue Coffee.
Back to the show. That's it. Shout out, Kirk. Thanks for doing this in the car.
See you soon, guys.
It was worth it. Had to talk some Jay Kelly. Next week, we are doing Knives Out. Wake Up Dead Man and Knives Out Story. And I don't know what the second movie is, because I think they're kind of in a weird release zone in the next like week. But we will figure something out. Maybe
it is. Let's do Hamnet if Clemmer's going to see it Monday. Everyone will see it, right?
Yeah, maybe Hamnet works. Maybe Hamnet and Wake Up Dead Man would be a good little 1-2 punch there.
Love it.
Yeah, that's it. And Kendrick will be back as well. For Clemmer and Gooch and Kirk, I'm Jeff D. Lowe. We will talk to you next time.